For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast and Edmunds Podcast. Here with Alistair Weaver. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre. How are you, buddy?
I'm very good, thank you. It's been a busy few days, but nice to be sat down talking.
Yeah,
to
it's
you.
Been a busy few days. We're back from RenSport, and you guys have been back in the office, chugging away on a handful of new things that we want to get into. I guess we could certainly start with RenSport. So you went up there a little bit earlier, as we covered last week. You did the ride up in your 911, and as you were basically leaving town, we were just getting into town. I was just getting up there. So a little bit of a crossover. I was there for the weekend, whereas you were there, I think, Thursday, Friday. But
I did overall, the business end, you did the fun bit.
Yeah. Overall, a fantastic event, and seeing how RenSport has grown over the years. And it really seems like Porsche went all out on how they curated it and the guests they invited. And, ticket sales was off the hook. I heard about 100,000 people over the course of RenSport.
I heard more than that. And for people who weren't listening to last week's show, don't know, RenSport is this event that happens once every 4 years that is organized by Porsche. And it's just a huge celebration of all their kind of motorsport triumphs and road cars and everything else. And I think it was 50,000 people there on Saturday, they were claiming, and it was a sellout for the day tickets. It was just an extraordinary celebration of all things Porsche for their 75th anniversary. And anybody who was anybody in the world of Porsche was there and was flown in for the occasion. And even just wandering around the car parks or driving around the roads sort of around the event was just it's a bit like Monterey Car Week, but just for Porsche.
Right. It's like the Rolex Historics at the track during Car Week, and it's just all Porsches. And they had a stage built, and they had some ongoing chats throughout the event, and they had some music playing at night, some live concerts, and I think everyone's going to come home and go, if they dropped the ball anywhere, it was on the merchandise building, which consistently had a 2+ hour line, just constantly just 2 hours plus. And I was like, I don't know if I need a $42 t-shirt that badly. It was always there. The line was huge the whole weekend.
Well, I arrived Thursday morning, and I mean, I was almost like one of the first people in, and there was already a huge snake of people. And I was like, oh, is that like some, mission unveil, or is it like, some epic old driver that's signing autographs or whatever? And no, that's the merch line. Yeah. And then I went in on Friday, and I was like, oh, the line's gone down. That's good. I might get the kids a t-shirt. And then it was like, no, the line hasn't gone down. It's just that it got so crazy that we've like snaked it in a different direction. Yeah, it was, my intent was to go and get the kids a t-shirt, and frankly, I don't have the patience to queue for 2 hours.
I didn't even look yet, but it came up a bunch of times. You're like, can't you just get this stuff online? Can't you just go to
I don't think you can. I think I was talking to some of the Porsche guys, and I think that was part of it, that they wanted to create a degree of kind of exclusivity, that if you went, you got access to this thing. But it's an astonishing brand, Porsche, because I mean, I suppose only brands like maybe Ferrari, Lamborghini, to a certain extent, can get this, but Porsche is just that much more accessible. So you walk around the car parks and you've got everything from 959s and, the crazy GT3 RSs and GT2s. And there was also some of the roofs and the singers and all that sort of thing. But then you've also got people showing up in, old 911s or old Boxsters and things, that's just that much more accessible. So they've become this brand that can talk to you on lots of different levels. And yeah, I think they did an amazing job of curating the experience for everybody. And I wasn't there at the weekend, but I understood. I saw how busy it was Friday night and thought it's probably not a bad idea to leave right now because I'd had two great days. But,
you know, and Saturday was fantastic as well. But honestly, Sunday did die down a little bit. And I think with an event like that, I just feel like Sunday was a travel day for a lot of people, especially if you're coming from, you know, outside of, you know, the Western states, then yeah, then you don't want to be wheels up at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and then, you know, you're home at 2 a.m. or you're home on Monday. So it seemed like a little bit softer day. But interesting was, is as many people as there were at the event, it still wasn't difficult to get around. I think there were some parking issues a little bit just to get in, but overall the lines in to the track were not bad because they had both the front and the back basically opened up. So you can go either side. And although a ton of people, there wasn't so many people that you couldn't get around and see everything that you wanted to see. You can go, you know, and again, to kind of give you the lay of the land is on the infield of the racetrack where the paddock is and all the race cars are set up, Vintage Racing and Porsche's tent for their Cup Series. It's all accessible. You could just, everything is basically a pit pass, right? So you can just walk around and see and talk to everybody. And go into the Porsche Heritage tent and the Tag Heuer tent and see their displays and how the cars that they curated. And some very, very cool stuff as well. So, and it wasn't that difficult to get around. And then
there's a lot of taking on trust, wasn't there? It's like yeah. Oh, that's a 917 and that's worth X million dollars. Just sort of sitting there on the asphalt with people taking pictures of it. And then, oh, next door is like the guy's singer, which is presumably his road car to go with his 917 race car.
Oh, yeah. There was no shortage of million-dollar plus cars just around. And then it got a little rain. So, you know, if some of the high-end cars got covered and the display cars got covered, but you're right. If somebody just showed up in their Singer and that was their travel car for the weekend as they had their vintage, then the Singer's covered in dirt and rain and everything is like, feels like it's a little thrashed. But yeah. And by the way, when you say, hey, will you see a 959? You'll see seven 959s, right? You won't just see one of anything unless it's a one-off car. You saw the first Boxster, you know, Porsche ever was there on display.
Well, the first ever Porsche was there actually.
Yeah, the first ever Porsche. And then, you know, 907s, 906s, and like you said, 959s, 917, the Gulf livery 917 that was in the Tag booth was just amazing.
And all the old drivers as well, which was fantastic. And particularly yes. the sort of eras going, you know, going back in time, there's a lot of, I don't know, racing, the old thing about racing being different back in the day and the fact that it was so crazy dangerous, you know, so many like epic stories will suddenly die with a lot of these guys. And, you know, it was. I had a chat with Derek Bell, who I've met a few times, and Derek is now, you know, into his 80s.
Yeah.
You know, 5-time Le Mans winner, 3-time Daytona 24-hour winner, raced in Formula One with Ferrari, McLaren, Surtees. I'm sort of pulling, you know, this is just the sort of highlights of his career. This sort of epic driver, and he was there, and he's now, you know, he's this big, larger than life character, like a lot of them were in that sort of post-war era. And, you know, he was going around signing autographs and, you know, he's still like, I was chatting to him and he said he's got this crazy schedule. He'd just been on a Ferrari event. Now he was here. Then he was off to do something else. And he was off to, he once told me a story. It's away from racing, but he told me a story, which I believe to be true, that he was in the Le Mans film with Steve McQueen. And at the end of the movie, they were sharing a house together and Steve McQueen gave him one of the Heuer Monaco watches. But I think they had 7 on set. And he gave him one. And I believe, and I didn't check with him this time, but he's told me this story before on a Bentley event, that Derek then lost it. Can you imagine?
Whoops. I like that Steve McQueen probably got them all on the set of the movie and just took them and just started handing them out to people or signing them or doing whatever he was going to do with them. There was a little bit of that back in the day, which was much easier. We talked to a guy about a movie and a watch, and I don't think it was a McQueen watch, maybe it was a Newman watch, and yeah, they had like called Rolex or something, like, we need a few of these watches for the movie, before there was an actual Paul Newman Rolex, a Paul Newman spec. And yeah, and then, you know, Newman's like, hey, you know, we got these from Rolex and the movie's over, and he gave it to like the stunt guy, or he gave it to the guy that curated the watches. It was in charge of them for the movie. He was like, oh, you get one here, you take one. And that guy still has it. So
an original Daytona or something.
I was talking to Derek Bell and Tommy Kendall as well, and I love those guys. They're fantastic. And we were just talking about all kinds of stuff at the event and racing, and Justin's dad, Derek, as you mentioned, and at some point up on the stage, Justin Bell was doing a QA with a couple of guys and his dad. And the clouds rolled in and it got very moist in the air. It was like about to rain and the wind was kicking up, and they're in the middle of this conversation. And I see Derek Bell just freezing and just start shrinking down into a little tiny, like a little tiny human pod. And I was like, your dad was so cold up there. He's like, I know. He goes, I felt so bad. The poor guy was freezing up there. He's like, we were just trying to finish up so we could scurry away and find some warmth. But overall, it was a cool event. And then, you know, then they do the big car show and you compete for the various trophies. That's cool to see, because all of the cars line up on the straightaway that are invited to compete. And now you can just kind of walk basically on the track, on the straightaway in the pit area, and see all of these cars lined up in a row and be able to photograph them and talk to some of the people that own them or maintain them, and sort of see them compete for various things, just how good the car is and how good the history is on that car. And I didn't realize how that's grown so much, like how prestigious it is to get one of those awards. A couple of years ago at the last event, Laguna Seca, you know, Adam Carolla went up and he brought his Porsche 935, which the car was invited back, and we sent it up there and it was on display. It was a great location, by the way. It was right in front of the merch line. So literally thousands of people just stood there for hours and watched the car. And it was also next to the stage where all of the interviews and the concerts were. So it was kind of a great location. And I went down there a few times to talk to some people and, you know, about the car and stuff. At the last Rennsport, Adam had just finished doing some racing, and then we sent the car up for the car show. And then we came back and he was like changing, getting out of the racing suit, and we were just grabbing a beer. And then we hear over the announcement that the car won the WISAC trophy. And now that's, at the time, we didn't realize how good that was, but that's one of the top awards that they have there. So now that we have that, it's kind of pretty cool to have that to go along with the car. But we just didn't realize the magnitude of it at the time because we were so distracted with other stuff. And then Adam ran over there and then got up on stage and got his award. And we're like, what is this award for? And then, you know, it took a while for them to kind of explain how great it was. But
yeah,
and we had never been to the event, so we didn't really realize, you know, it's like winning Pebble Beach basically for Porsches.
The guy who looks after my 993, Jan from VNS Motors, he looks after Beverly Hills classic cars, and he actually won. He's an incredible restoration of a 964, and it's a competition run across dealers in the US, and he can only use parts in the official Porsche catalog. So it's a kind of hybrid. We talked a little bit about it last week, but I went and had a look at it on Friday. So it's a sort of hybrid of the best parts of a 993 with a 964, mm-hmm. and bits of kind of RS in there, and it has a wooden gear stick from 917. It's an amazing piece of kit. And he won that award as well. So he was super happy. It's an amazing piece of work. And yeah, there's a bit of like something for everybody in this event. And you know, there was even a pink, you remember like the pink pig livery,
famous livery
on the front. There was an artist had done a pink pig in the Porsche livery, like a genuine, like life-size pig, but like the Porsche pig. There's all sorts of weird stuff going on.
There was definitely some weird stuff going on. The other thing that they do at the event, which is very cool, is they don't grid up the cars on the track before they start. They do it off track near where one of the entrances to the tracks is located. And they do that so spectators can watch all the cars grid up and not be in a dangerous situation like being on the track. Not to mention on the track where they would normally line up or where all the garages are. And that turned in sort of two VIP sections to watch the event for different sponsors and stuff. So it made it a little bit better. So now the sponsors and VIPs can use those areas in the hospitality areas, but not make it exclusive to them. So everyone else that had a ticket can just walk up and just sort of the roped off section can see all the cars grid up. They did a great job with that. That was cool. And they had done that at the last event as well. So that's where Adam had to grid up with his 935 last time. So it was very, very cool to see. The vintage stuff is great. There was a little bit of water on the track throughout the day. That made things a little bit exciting, especially for the older cars. But you want to see something crazy in person as well is the new cup cars, the Porsche cup cars on the track. And obviously with professional drivers, that's an exciting race to see because they are going at it. That's full on.
I mean, we were talking last week that I went out and had a lap in a GT3 RS road car, which, and then, you know, obviously the GT3 R race cars are a different beast again. But yeah, I mean, you talk about GT3 cars and everything else, but they, you know, the race cars, but these are not quite that, but they are serious things. And then Porsche did as part of the thing, I think this is where I was skipping off to, as we were talking last time, they revealed this. They basically took the idea of if we could have a GT3 R race car without having to worry about all the regulations and everything else, what would we do? And they unveiled something called the 911 GT3 R Rennsport, which was a car built to in a tribute to this event. And I went to the launch on Thursday night, and there was a big fanfare, and the car drove out of the pit garage and drove around the circuit in the dead of night and stuff. I mean, it looks amazing. It's a really cool thing. It sounds fantastic. The only problem with it is, you know, it's another one of these sort of super exotic things that they're only going to build 77. It's going to be way over $1 million by the time you've got it. You probably can't buy one even if you want one. And it's just a little bit, I love it. And I love the fact that it, you know, it's part of me loves the way that it exists, but we're seeing so many of these now. And it's a bit like, okay, it's another million-dollar car that you'll never see.
You know, the last Rennsport, they unveiled the modern-day 935, which is like
this
GT3R.
Right?
Yeah, similar concept. They were going to make a limited production. It was going to be a track-only vehicle. And yes, it was going to, you know, the top of the list of collectors and Porsche guys. And no one's ever seen one on the road because it's not street legal. No one's ever seen one on the track because it's millions of dollars. And you've seen a few pop up and trade at auctions for a massive premium. So, yes, it's saying, hey, we've got a GT3 R Rennsport edition. It's a track only race car. It's never going to get dirty. It's only going to be, it's an art piece that you trade at this point. With incredible engineering behind it, but that's kind of where we are with some of these cars. Honestly, of all the cars that we saw at Rennsport, new and old, did you see any of the modern day 935 track only car that they debuted 4 years ago?
No, that's a very good point. No, I didn't.
right?
Not one.
If you were ever going to drive that car, Rennsport on like an exhibition lap or something, I'm sure if you called and said, can I get my car out there? They would figure it out and say, yes. I didn't see a single car out there. And if you were ever going to drive that car on the track, the event this past weekend would have been the event to do it. And I didn't see a single one of the 935s. I didn't see one on display. I didn't see one in a trailer. I didn't see one in any of the curated tents. I didn't see any at all. And I've only seen them when they debuted it at Rennsport years ago and at a car auction.
You're right, Matt. Sadly,
they're just like,
I hadn't thought about it, but I hadn't seen any either. So yeah, there were more roofs and things like that than there were, I didn't see any of those. So you're quite right. I'm going to finish before we move on. I'm going to finish one more Derek Bell anecdote, which
yes.
I thought was fantastic. We happened to be sat in a bus going back. We were staying in the same hotel. We were sat in a bus just by chance going back to the hotel. And we were talking about, because he raced for Ferrari in the late 60s in Formula One, and I was asking about Enzo Ferrari, that he thought was a good guy and everything else. And then we were talking about the 917, the Porsche race car, and I'd seen a picture on Instagram of the chassis without the body panels, and it basically looks like a bunch of, you know, cycle tubes stuck together. And he said we had a pressure gauge for the chassis. I said, what was that for? Like, if that goes down, then does that mean that, you know, you lose certain, like, you know, handling integrity or what happens? No. He said, no. If that pressure gauge goes down, you're more worried about the thing being on your head. So, yeah. And I never heard that story before, that there's a pressure gauge for the chassis. And if it, so like you're driving, I don't know, we're doing like, what, 240 miles an hour in those things down the Mulsanne at Le Mans?
Yeah.
And you're watching this little pressure gauge, not for like the engine, but for the chassis going to give up on me.
Yeah, it's a death gauge. If it loses pressure, you know you're going to die in a crash, is basically what he's saying. But it's also an interesting thought where it's all tube frame, and if it's completely welded and sealed up, they add a gauge, and then they probably add just some sort of port, like an air port, you know, like a valve stem of some sort, create some air in it, see if it holds, and if it holds, they get enough pressure to whatever the gauge, just enough in the to make it make sense to have a reading on the gauge, you know, call it 30 psi or something. And you're right, if at any point there is a stress crack, any sort of crack enough to leak and have the gauge go down, now you're definitely in harm's way if something happens, because there's some structural integrity flaw in the chassis. But I don't necessarily know if having the gauge makes sense, because none of those racers are going to go, hey, I lost chassis pressure, I need to come in because I feel like it's too dangerous. None of them are going to quit. And all you're doing is just making them nervous and going, now you're at a higher risk than before.
Well, Derek was also saying, was talking about his Formula One Ferrari, and he said, and you see them when at these old events, he said, I sat in there, and I'm sure he's told this story a billion times, but it's still amazing to like hear it firsthand. And, you know, there's never going to be another era. You know, these are all days gone by. And he said he had, in the F1 Ferrari, he had a fuel tank basically by his right leg going down the chassis, a fuel tank by his left leg, and then another fuel tank basically across his crotch. So almost like an H.
So I said, yeah.
Basically, Derek, you're sitting in a bomb. He said, yeah. There's right. also this argument that, yeah, Ferrari tend to kill a few less people than Lotus back then. And, you know, you're listening to, I was sort of eavesdropping on some of the, had all the old racers just talking to each other. And I think it must be amazing to have come through. There's others like Jackie Stewart and others that came through, Mario Andretti and others that came through that era. You must feel so sort of privileged to be alive that you raced so hard and so long in stuff that was basically a death trap. And now here you are in your 80s, still like being a superhero at these events, turning up, shaking some paws, driving. Derek was driving, you know, joining and driving some of the old race cars. And it's just, what a life. I mean, but then, you know, going back in time, you know, so many of your friends and colleagues and teammates just died.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't think you go into racing today. I mean, I've, as you know, I've raced for a bunch of years, and you know going into it that, you know, you might have a bad crash or whatever, and I had a couple, but not, you never go into it thinking like, I'm going to die.
Right.
Never.
Right. And you're right. Back then, the risk, arguably higher than racing today, because the cars are so much safer. They're maybe faster, but they're certainly safer.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
And sort of the superhero nature of some of those racing drivers back then, if you think about it, at Rennsport, I was walking around and got a chance to chat a little bit with Danny Sullivan again, who I'd met a few times before, and again, just a fascinating guy, and you know, an incredible racing career, but. You know, also in his day, you know, he was in Playgirl magazine. He was kind of a, you know, he was a playboy himself, and he was dating supermodels. And then, you know, he had a couple stints on like Miami Vice. He was on the TV show a few times. Like, they, you know, he was a superstar in his day. Like that guy lived in, like, that's a good documentary. You know, that's a good documentary. I know we talked about, you know, I'm sorry, what's his name in Rush, in that movie, being sort of
James
a playboy.
Yeah,
James Hunt being a playboy, but Danny Sullivan was the guy as well. Like he was, and you know, and you see him now at the track and he's an older guy, but you're like, I get it. Like back then he was, you know, he had rock star status, you know, and I'm sure if you sat down, if I had a little bit more time to start to get into some of those stories, not just the racing stuff, the life outside of racing, is fascinating. That's a good documentary, I think, one day, is for a guy like that. But all right, so moving on from Rennsport, a couple of things that you guys have been tackling. You got into the new BMW, the i5, the all-electric BMW, and you guys got some seat time now in the Mustang Dark Horse. You were able to take it to your team and do some tests.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we've driven every Mustang before, but this is the first time we've had the Dark Horse in particular down at the test track and able to run the numbers on it. And this was on Monday, and I actually shot a film which is coming out in the not too distant future when I've done the voiceover. So it was my first time actually spending proper time in the Dark Horse. I've driven the GT before. And it was really interesting because when this first came out, it was really the halo car for the rest of the Mustang range. It was also supposed to be the road car linked with the race cars that they've got coming out. And it was sort of like, how do you position this thing? Is it the new Mac 1? Is it like a GT350, the Shelby version?
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to get it on the track. And we also had a standard GT there as well. So I was kind of able to drive them both back to back on the handling circuit and run the numbers and everything else. So yeah, super interesting car. And of course, also now it's in a world where, you know, Camaro's going, Challenger's going. So this is going to, for the next few years, has almost got the market to itself. We were trying to work out what are the rivals. Well, Nissan Z Nismo, maybe, but it's only two seats and you know, philosophically a bit different. BMW M2, well, yeah, but it's smaller and really ugly. So, you know, actually, there's not a lot of competition. And it looks it's
Corvette. Corvette would be the only thing out there, although two seater and a little bit
too expensive. Yeah, I mean, Corvette's quite a lot more. I mean, the Corvette's too. Yeah, I mean, the Corvette, you're getting well into the 80s. I mean, the car that we had was fully loaded.
You know, Corvette versus Dark Horse, not necessarily versus Mustang. You know,
GT. Yeah, I mean, the Dark Horse we had everything on it. You know, one of those where it's actually a press vehicle. Ford had obviously decided, right, just send this thing out with everything we've got. So $1,600 Recaro seats, and it was the Dark Horse with the track package. So it had these kind of Trofeo tires, which were more like slicks than road tires. Glad it didn't rain. And, you know, this was a manual, but it was coming in at nearly 74 grand, like 73 and a half grand, which is a lot of money for a Mustang. And the Dark Horse already is about, model for model, is about 16 grand more than the GT. So yes, you're buying exclusivity, you're buying a bit of cachet and a bit of bragging rights. But for 16 grand more than the GT, you're actually kind of expecting quite a bit in terms of how it delivers.
Yeah, and interesting. So I drove the GT and I drove the EcoBoost and I drove the manual transmissions and got to play around with the drift brake and whatever. So Dark Horse wasn't available when I was driving the cars. But Dark Horse was meant to be the replacement for Mach 1. And over the years, we've had Mustang Bullet, and then we had a Mach 1, then we had another Bullet, and then we had another Mach 1. And now Dark Horse is meant to be that. Now, I fully expect a Shelby version of the Mustang, you know, a six-figure car to come out at some point, maybe another year or so down the road. But in the meantime, yeah, Dark Horse is sort of fitting the bill of where Mach 1 would be. So I'm curious, if you have some of the numbers, how does Dark Horse compare to the new Mustang GT? And how does it compare to the previous generation Mustang Mach 1 like I have?
So these are hot off the press, as we say, because we only ran the car on Monday and we finally computed everything today. So looking at our numbers, so there's a little caveat here in that I've got GT manual, I've got GT auto, and I've got Mach 1. It just shows how many cars we actually test down at the track each year. It's about 150 or so. So Dark Horse runs 0 to 60 in 4.6, quarter mile in 12.8 at 111.6.
With which transmission?
That's with the auto transmission.
Okay.
If I then go to, bear with me a moment. If I then go to like the Mach 1, for example, slight caveat that this has, this was the auto transmission. So the 2021 Mach 1, we ran 0 to 60 in 4.1, a quarter in 12.2. So Dark Horse with manual was 4.6 and 12.8. If you then look at the GT Performance Auto, so this is kind of where it gets interesting, right? Actually, I'll give you the manual first. Sorry, I'm jumping around a bit here. So if you have a manual GT, 0 to 60, 4.8, quarter 12.7. If you then go for the Dark Horse, which is not just about straight line speed, but has a few more horsepower, then it was running 4.6 and 12.8. So it's kind of interesting. The quarter's actually marginally slower here, but at the same speed.
Right. And that's manual versus manual.
That's manual versus manual. But then on Monday, we also had the GT with a performance pack auto there. and ran 0 to 60. That's the 10-speed auto. 0 to 60, 4.3. Quarter mile in 12.5. So you just see the big difference there. That you're talking like half a second to 60 just by going with the auto. It's just, and that's pretty much all in the launch. And then the Mach 1 auto, 4.1 and 12.2. So they're all kind of like in the same ballpark. And you just have to make a decision if you're buying one of these things. If you really want to run numbers in a straight line, then go with the auto. But like, really, don't buy the auto. The manual's fantastic in all of these things. It's such a nice gearbox. And you're never going to buy them. Like, don't buy an auto. You're never going to buy them. You know, the whole point of these things is it's the last like bastion of old school fun. Crazy V8 sounds incredible.
That's why I got my Mach 1, is I wanted the manual transmission and I wanted the Tremec transmission and I wanted all the handling stuff, that sort of the best bits of at the time Bullitt GT350 and GT500. So yes, what we weren't able to do was go Mach 1 manual versus Dark Horse manual, or Mach 1 auto versus Dark Horse auto. We didn't get an apples to apples comparison there yet, but we can start to see what's going on with the numbers. And
we've only tested four of them. No, yeah. And the EcoBoost. Yeah. We also tested the EcoBoost as well.
It's tough to get all the different configurations. You would just run out of time.
I mean, even the EcoBoost, just purely for context, because everybody belittles the EcoBoost as a higher car. You know, the EcoBoost is running 5.6 to 60 and 14.2 for the quarter. So it's not as fast, but it's still not too far behind. I mean, where the Dark Horse did score was just, it's especially on the tire, on the tires it has. It's a Trofeo Ars, if I remember correctly. They are super sticky. So it ran 1.12G on our skid pad, which she's only 0.02 better than the Mach 1. The Mach 1 did 1.1. A GT Performance Auto did 0.98. I mean, that a lot of that's in the tire, but it's interesting. That's where you get the big step going for the tires and also the revised suspension and stuff into the dark.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Of course. But we were kind of curious going into it how different this thing was going to feel, because they've done a lot to the suspension, the tires. They've changed quite a bit on the car to justify the jump in price. And we wondered whether it was going to feel more like a Shelby without the snake and without quite as much power. And the reality is it doesn't. It feels like a slightly faster, slightly sharper, slightly cooler looking, a lot more exclusive version of a Mustang GT. It still has that kind of Mustang feel to it. The Shelby that we have, the GT500 that Edmund still owns, it feels much more like a kind of track-orientated sports car. much more than you'd think. And so you think about like the transition from the way that it pushes into the way that it then starts to oversteer. It's everything is very tied down. In the Dark Horse, you still get that Mustang feeling where you turn in and the whole thing sort of takes a set. And then as you come back onto the power, it's sort of, so you almost like wait for it to settle and then you kind of come back into the power, at which point it's actually quite hard, even with 500 horsepower, to get it to, you know, to get it to slide. So it's super capable, but it's not quite as stiff, even in the track settings. It's not quite as stiff, not quite as track orientated as we thought maybe it would be. And maybe that's also about Ford saying, well, there'll be a Shelby, there'll be this and that. So, you know, maybe also the aftermarket will have some fun with it going, you know, taking it a step further. So on the track, it was a bit like, it was fun, but it wasn't quite as sharp as maybe we anticipated. But it's a great road car. I mean, it's just fun. But then, so's the GT. You know, a GT manual is still a really fun car. So you buy the Dark Horse because it looks cool and you really want one. I don't think you buy it because it's like a quantum leap over the standard GT.
Yeah, right. And I haven't dove into it enough to know if there were some significant changes that are hard to replicate, like steering rack or, you know, chassis stiffening or something like that, that might be a little bit different. Kind of like the conversation we had with the engineers about Bronco versus Bronco Raptor. And it was like, all of the mounting points for the chassis are not.
I mean, most of it's
steering rack is beefed up. And I was like, yeah, that's not really stuff you're going to be able to buy in the aftermarket. You know, so you want Bronco Raptor if you're going to go off road. Otherwise, you don't need it. But Dark Horse, I think you're right. Still a lot of bolt on parts and calibration. So you could start with GT. You could start with EcoBoost and work your way up. You can do some modifications. You can add superchargers. You can do all that.
Yeah, most of it's just suspension tuning, breathing, bolt-on parts, that sort of thing. Yeah. Gurney flaps. So it's the aftermarket will have fun with this, and you know that's part of the charm. I mean, I think it's a good Mustang. It's I'm glad they're still making it. You know, they're not going to sell that many, but they will sell enough. And, you know, they've got a few years to run. And if you want like an old school V8 with a fantastic manual gearbox and it still feels big and heavy and all that stuff, and you can still got, you know, it's still got a big trunk and you can still throw the kids in the back seat, and it's a Mustang, right? It's
it'll do
74
well.
Grand though. Like that's the only thing, like you're getting, particularly the interior, you're getting, you go, 74 grand, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway,
you know what? It'll do well. And what else I anticipate will do well is if they take the new Coyote engine out of that car, either the stock GT version or the Dark Horse version, and make that available as a crate engine in the Ford Performance Parts catalog. I think that'll do well. And one of the main reasons why is the dual throttle body setup, because now there's symmetry in the engine and everyone doing a Coyote swap or any sort of hot rod or Bronco or a custom build like we see at SEMA, you would always have to go from the single throttle body and do like a 90 degree turn, because you would need the mass airflow sensor to work. And if you split it and created symmetry, it was very complicated to do and difficult to tune. And the only way to do it, you couldn't do it with the Ford Performance Pack, really. You'd have to do like a Holley fuel injection or something, and then you can do it based on MAP instead of mass airflow. You can do manifold pressure, and you can kind of split it off and do it that way. But very difficult to tune. But if Ford says, hey, we got dual throttle body version, and we've got Performance Pack and harness to make it work, then you can get pretty creative and have some cool symmetry. Honestly, just for the aesthetics alone, not to mention you get a little bit more power and you get a nicer engine, a newer engine. I think there's going to be a lot of swaps with that if they make that available. So we'll see what happens in a month. Are you going to SEMA? That's a question.
Yeah, I've just been asked to be on a panel, actually. And they sent me an email and said, can you fly out on October the 31st? And I was like, if I flew out on October the 31st, my wife and kids would kill me.
Yeah.
So I'm not, but I'm going to fly in, I think, next morning on the 1st. So I'm on a panel talking about the future of like the aftermarket industry in the world of EV and everything else, which will be kind of fun to do. So I'm going to be there. It's always a great show. It's nice to see everybody, and always kind of blown away by the scale of it.
Yeah,
there's one show in Europe at Essen in Germany which is similar, and that is also, you know, you get those big German tuning brands like the Brabus and Lorenzer and Hark and all those guys.
Yeah, right.
Which is a different, and it, you know, that's a slightly different market. But yeah, I'm always blown away by SEMA, just the money and the scale and just what's going on. It's great.
And it'll be the first year of SEMA Fest. So if you stick around to the following weekend, there's, you know, the big concert series and car shows and drifting and you know, I don't know, Third Eye Blind and Incubus and Imagine Dragons, and they're doing it. And I'm excited to see it. I don't expect it to be perfect. It's the first time for them trying to do an event like this, so I'm going to cut them a little slack. I'm sure it's going to be fun. And yeah, it'd be nice to see if Ford would, you know, debut of a new crate engine, new Coyote crate engine. Certainly they could phase out one of the older ones. They have a couple generations of them already, but it's kind of an interesting thought. Before we wrap up, I had mentioned the BMW, because BMW is getting into the midsize sedan as an electric vehicle now. The 5 Series is a good product for them. And I think the size of 5 Series is a good size, good platform for EV. What were you guys got a chance to drive it. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think we're hoping to get one over here quickly as well, because this was driving it over overseas. I mean, basically, BMW has taken the opposite route to Mercedes. So BMW is saying, we're going to do, like we did the 7 Series, we're going to do a gas and an electric version of the 5 Series, and then basically take your pick as to whether you want to buy an EV or a gas car, which is an interesting route, because Porsche, Mercedes, everybody else is saying, you can't do that. It's too compromised. We're going to build EV specific, like the EQE, and Porsche is going to do an EV Macan and not do a gas car. So it's interesting. It's an interesting like strategy from BMW. I mean, they don't sell many of these anymore. I mean, we think it's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing overall. But you know, most of the interest will be in X5, not i5. You know, or not 5 Series anymore. We are though going to put together. You know, obviously there's a new E-Class this year. There's a new 5 Series. So we are going to get both. We're looking forward to getting both of them in, back into the US and, you know, putting them head to head.
It's not bad looking. I like that it's got sort of the
tamed
down.
With faint praise, isn't it, for BMW design at the moment? Yeah, it's still got like a grill that looks, the grill still looks.
It's just too much black or something that's going on. Yeah, it's like a BMW merged with a GTR, and it's like, it's a little weird. And you know, so it's not a home run on design, but none of BMW is so far.
Their argument is like the 5 Series is very evolutionary, and you know, it's an executive car, isn't it? And so you've got the i4, then you've got the i5, the i7. And then, you know, you have the iX, which is more of the kind of bespoke electric car, which is kind of ground up EV, which, again, I think is a fantastic car. We have one on our fleet, and we're running it for a year. I can't get on with the exterior looks, but the interior is fantastic. And, you know, we're pretty good fans of it. So, you know, we only drove the i5, so we haven't driven the gas car yet. But, you know,
we've got two versions, right? We've got a long range and a performance one with a little bit shorter range. We got 295 miles on the high end, 270 on the low end. And then we've got 0 to 60 in 5.7 seconds or 3.7 seconds.
Yeah. And this is something that BMW tends to do as well. And, you know, we'll get it back into the US and put it through the, you know, the Edmunds EV range test to find out how it's, you know, how it really delivers. Honestly, we tend to beat the EPA. So, you know, those are pretty good figures.
Forgive me, it was 270 to 295 on the eDrive 40 engine. But when you get to the bigger motor, it's 240 to like 256 miles.
Yeah.
So it's basically 240 on the low end to 295 miles on the high end. And it depends on your level of performance that you're going for.
Yeah. Exactly, where your ego sits, to be honest.
Yeah, really, and your wallet.
Yeah, where your ego and your wallet sits, right?
Yeah. Anyway, it seems kind of interesting. It's not a bad looking vehicle, and you're right, the interior is going to be nice. We'll see where BMW goes with it. And you know, look, BMW wants a sporty sedan out of it as well. So when you get into the fast version, it's 593 horsepower, and you know, I'm sure it's going to scoot along pretty well.
Yeah. And there's rumors of it can't be MI5, can it? That's the British Secret Service, but it would be I don't know what they're going to call it, I5M or I don't know.
I5M. It seems like MI5 would be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. James Bond was technically MI6, but yeah.
Yeah, well, for a stint there, he did drive a BMW.
He did, but he was paid a lot of money to drive it, and he never looked at home in it.
Yeah.
That's probably a good place to wrap, Matt.
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap it up.
We can get into James Bond and terrible merchandising deals later.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. You can check out edmunds.com and you can check us out at carcastshow.com. You know where we are on social media, so we won't hit that again this week. We're just going to wrap things up because we both got other needs to jump into. So thanks, Alistair. Appreciate it. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carcast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. Carcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.